From the KGOU studios, I'm Suzek Rilat, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma, and welcome to Worldviews. Rebecca Cruz and I discussed last month's attack on a shopping mall in Kenya and the effect on the country's political system and tourism industry. We'll also explore the foreign policy implications of this week's partial government shutdown.
This does send an interesting message to those leaders. Are we really going to be focusing our attention there? Are we really trying to get involved in the region and trying to exert our interest there vis-a-vis China? And that has consequences.
And later, Oklahoma City Attorney Reggie Witten joins me to talk about his philanthropic work in Africa.
We all remember Hitler and Stalin and Joseph Kony. It's just not right that Sister Rosemary, who's the principal person standing up for these girls, is not remembered.
These conversations, but first, this hour's news. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzek Rilat. Rebecca Cruz, thanks for joining me today. Let's talk about how the government shutdown has implications for our foreign policy, national security, and diplomatic activities. I mean, right off the bat, we see that President Obama, who has a 17-day trip to Asia, all part of this so-called pivot to Asia, right, that we're trying to spend more time on Asian countries. His trip is now being affected. So what's going on here? This impact that it's going to have on our ability to engage in diplomatic activities around the world.
Yeah, this pivot to Asia, it's met roadblocks left and right. And once again, we see the president having to change his plans. This is not the first time he's had to cancel trips to Asia. There were a couple of cancellations in 2010 and other times. And so this does send an interesting message to those leaders. Are we really going to be focusing our attention there? Are we really trying to get involved in the region and trying to exert our interest there vis-a-vis China? And that has consequences.
Well, so additional consequences, things like our own national security forces, fighter squadrons that are being grounded in the Air Force, National Guard and Reserve, troops that are, of course, non-essential, considered non-essential, and so they're not engaged in their training. A very large portion of the intelligence apparatus is being shut down because they rely so heavily on contractors, for example. You know, parts of the diplomatic corps and the State Department are being limited in their travel and their ability to engage in organized activities and events. I mean, this has broader implications, not just President Obama's trip to Asia. I mean, that's obviously very visible right now, but it has these broader implications. What is this going to do for us if this goes on for very long?
Well, it's really hard to say. Dealing with international security, or actually homeland security, we do know that Customs and Border Protection will remain open, and so our borders will be monitored. Flights coming in and out of the country will be monitored. But thinking about people trying to come here to be tourists, obviously we've heard a lot about the parks closing and those sorts of things, but people trying to come here to work, to study, to be tourists, visa applications are going to be backlogged significantly. We know that there's still some folks in place right now, but they're going to slow down. And if we think about the shutdown that occurred in 1995-96, it was about 3 weeks. And during that time, they said that there was 20,000 to 30,000 visa applications that were unprocessed each day. So that's a significant amount. And then what about U.S. citizens that are wanting to travel abroad? We have to go through our government to get passports, and there's going to be a significant delay on that if this increases much more. We think again about the past shutdown where we had 200,000 U.S. applications for passports that were delayed. So that restricts what we can do in terms of traveling, and it restricts those people trying to come to this country. And of course, tourism and dollars are always associated there.
Well, clearly this is not good for anyone, at least at this point in time. But it is what it is, and hopefully we'll get it settled soon so that we can limit these implications. Well, turning to another topic, within the last couple of weeks, there was, of course, a very deadly attack in Kenya on the shopping mall that killed nearly 70 people. So the Al-Shabaab terrorist organization from Somalia has claimed responsibility for this attack. Kenyans are clearly outraged by this, including their own president, President Kenyatta, outraged, who I also think lost a family member in this event. So what do we see happening here? I mean, it's been a couple of weeks. We have some indications of some potential Western connections between terrorist activity there and maybe some British or American involvement, maybe even women involved in this activity. What are we seeing now?
Well, we're seeing a couple of things. We're seeing the president of Kenya obviously rallying the country and claiming, you know, that they are going to be steadfast in this. The Al-Shabaab has claimed that this is in retaliation for Kenyan forces being in Somalia, trying to bring down down some of the Islamic groups there. Al-Shabaab obviously has connections to Al-Qaeda. And so really being steadfast there. And Al-Shabaab then is coming out and saying this is just, you know, one of many planned events. There have been small ones going on here in the last year or so. This was obviously a large attack, and that Kenya can expect to see more unless they change their policies. So we could be watching the situation for quite some time. Now, you mentioned Al-Shabaab as a terrorist organization. For some reason, this organization has been very good at recruiting Western youth in particular, but Westerners, and they actually have a campaign, English videos on the internet and that sort of thing, that really calls on converts to Islam to come and fight the fight there in Somalia. And we know of at least 100 people from Great Britain and from the United States that have actually joined this organization. So very serious there. In terms of this last attack, Kenyan officials are looking for a German that is supposedly involved, an Andreas Mueller, who was recently seen in Uganda. They're trying to track him down. And then there's also some rumors about a female who you mentioned. Her name is Samantha Luthwaite, I believe, and she is known as the White Widow. She is the wife of one of the attackers from the 7/7 attack in London, and she has now become very active in this movement. It's unclear whether she was involved in this situation, but there have been rumors that she has been, and certainly people are continuing to look for her.
Well, you mentioned the impact of the government shutdown on tourism in the United States, but clearly this event has had an impact on tourism in Kenya, a country that is very dependent on tourist activities. Safaris are a big part of the tourist industry there. So people are starting to think, once again, should we be going? I mean, Kenya has been a relatively stable place in over the past decade, at least in Africa, and it's really drawn people from all around the world. And so now there are concerns not only about terrorism, but reprisal attacks on Somali communities there. And they have a lot of Somali immigrants in Kenya as well. And so the question, I guess, is whether we're going to see more instability in Kenya as a result of this. I mean, the president is committed to investigating the situation, the failures of intelligence and military response. But, you know, as you said, Al-Shabaab has promised that this is only the beginning.
Well, I think the mall was very strategic in picking that. That's a place where Westerners are known to hang out, and it's also an economic center. So, yes, this was intentional to show how powerful they are, not only there, but to the Western audience, and to hit an area where economics is thriving, and there will potentially be consequences for tourism and economic development, investment.
Well, thank you so much, Rebecca, for being with me today to share your insight, as always.
Thank you.
We'd love to hear your thoughts about the show or answer any questions you may have. Leave a comment on the Worldviews page of our website, kgou.org, or send us a tweet at WorldviewsKGOU. After a short break, I'll talk with Oklahoma City attorney Reggie Witten, who founded the charity Pros for Africa to help better the lives of children in Uganda and throughout the continent. I'm Suzette Grelot, and you're listening to Worldviews on KGOU. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Grelot. A year ago, we aired an interview with Sister Rosemary Nairumbe, a nun from Uganda who started a school in 2002 to help poor young girls and women who are affected by the decades-long Ugandan civil war. You can find a link to that original interview on our website. We met Sister Rosemary through Reggie Witten, a longtime Oklahoma City attorney who founded the charity Pros for Africa. Reggie Witten, welcome to Worldviews.
Glad to be here.
You have founded this organization called Pros for Africa. Tell us about this organization. What does it do, and how did it come about?
Well, it's sort of hard to answer that in a short question, but I'll give you the short version. A lot of people do think it's about football players because four of my co-founders are pretty good football players. I had a young lawyer that worked for me when we started the organization named Jay Mitchell, and he was a walk-on basketball player at OU, and he roomed with Mark Clayton and Roy Williams. So when we started talking about helping Sister Rosemary in Uganda, Jay introduced me to Mark and Roy, and they're extraordinary human beings. And ultimately, they introduced me to another fellow named Bill Horn, who is a sports marketing guy, a former pro baseball player. And Bill did the same thing everybody else does. He fell in love with Sister Rosemary and her work. So Bill introduced me to Adrian Peterson and Tommy Harris. And so those four players and Bill and I, we formed the organization called Pros for Africa. And it never occurred to us at first that anybody would just think it was professional football players. It's really professionals for Africa. We have a very strong connection to the OU Law School. So we have a pipeline of law students and law professors that go to Uganda, all volunteers, and they work on justice issues. There are a number of justice issues in Uganda and Africa as a whole, especially relative to the rights of women and children. We have a very strong connection to the OU Medical School. So the OU med students, they actually go over there and put on free medical clinics, started a couple of years ago. And this is their idea. They raised some money, and they every year they send a kid from Uganda to the Ugandan Medical School, which is very cool because we don't have enough doctors here in Oklahoma, but they sure don't have enough doctors and nurses and dentists in Uganda. Most of these kids have never seen a doctor or dentist in their life. We want professionals of all kinds to get involved. We had a friend of mine who his children met Sister Rosemary. He's got a six-year-old daughter. So on her own, she came up with the idea, instead of getting birthday presents for her on her birthday, she asked all her friends to bring birthday presents for Sister Rosemary's girls. So she collected a ton of toys that we shipped over there. So we have a six-year-old pro.
So pros of all kinds and all ages, not just professional football players, but others. But so you mentioned Sister Rosemary several times. We've had her as a guest on our show, and I definitely want to talk about her specific work. But before we get to that, tell us why Uganda? Why did you decide to go specifically to Uganda? What was your connection with Uganda that interested you in bringing all of these professionals to do work in Uganda of this sort?
Sure. In 2002, I had a 25-year-old son that played college football, and he got addicted to prescription pain pills and ended up dying in a vehicular accident. So about 9 months after he died, two buddies of mine who had been working in Africa, in Uganda, dragged me over there. I had no interest in going to Africa at all. I almost didn't go. I was in a very bad place. And so we went to northern Uganda, and in 2002, that was a very bad place to be. And we went up to Gulu, which is 20 miles from the South Sudan border. And Joseph Kony and the Lord's Resistance Army were still very active, but I never heard of them. I didn't have a clue who they were, and I didn't know who Sister Rosemary was. I didn't meet Sister Rosemary on that trip because she was traveling, but basically, I saw what was going on over there, and it helped. It was sort of a wake-up call to me. It made me see that the tragedy that happened to me and my family was not as bad as what happened to these children. And it was very helpful to me. It actually gave me a reason to live, to try to help these innocent children. And it changed the way I looked at the whole world. And so I came back home thinking that I needed to do something. So a couple of months later, I met Sister Rosemary on a trip to Washington, D.C., and just kind of fell in love with her. We come from very different backgrounds. I'm not Catholic. I was born and raised here in Oklahoma, but she and I are very close, and I never thought I'd end up having my best friend be a little Catholic nun from Africa, but she is one of my best friends, and she's become a hero to me. And so we started supporting her school, and ultimately we just felt like we needed a mechanism in place to help her fundraise. And so we started Pros for Africa, and we've broadened out from there quite a bit.
I'm speaking with Oklahoma City attorney and philanthropist Reggie Whitten, who founded the charity Pros for Africa after the death of his son Brandon. More of our conversation right after a break. I'm Suzette Grelot, and this is Worldviews. You're listening to Worldviews on KGOU. I'm Suzette Gorlot, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. My guest, Reggie Witten, founded the Oklahoma City-based charity Pros for Africa to help better the lives of children all over the continent. Just before the break, he described his relationship with Sister Rosemary Nyirumbe, who founded a school in Uganda for children affected by the atrocities of Joseph Kony and the Lord's Resistance Army. So specifically then, the work that Sister Rosemary is doing that you really – that touched you when you said that you see these children and you see the conditions in northern Uganda – post-conflict, you know, horrific civil war that was fought there. What is it specifically about those children and their experience and the work that she's doing that spoke to you and made you start up a whole organization and network with all of these amazing people to go to Uganda of all places?
Well, I'm a little bit of a history buff, but like I said, I knew nothing about Uganda. So I've studied the situation, and this Joseph Kony, the things he's done are horrific. It's really hard for us to believe something like that could happen, but he was building an army with kidnapped children. And it's been estimated 20,000 to 30,000 children kidnapped. The little boys he would force to join his army, and he would brainwash them. And the little girls became sex slaves. He called them wives. And it's unbelievable that something like that could happen, but it did. And the eyes of the world were not on that. You know, we're watching what's happening today in Syria. It's very visible. But in northern Uganda, there was very little visibility, very little media. And Sister Rosemary was right in the middle of this. Interestingly, she didn't have to be there. She chose to be there. And there was nobody else really standing up for these girls. And while everybody else was running, you know, they called these children night commuters or invisible children. That's when they would kidnap them from their homes. The invisible children name, I don't like that because they're not invisible. You can see them. And if anybody that doesn't believe that needs to go over there and see them. They're very visible. So I just felt like something had to be done about it. And Sister Rosemary had her 15 minutes of fame in 2007. She was discovered, ironically, by a rabbi who nominated her for the CNN Heroes Award. And as soon as the world saw her, they promptly forgot about her. And it bothered me as a student of history. We all remember Hitler and Stalin and Joseph Kony. But it bothers me that we don't remember the heroes that stand up to these people. And so 3 or 4 years ago, we began talking. It's just not right that Sister Rosemary, who's the principal person standing up for these girls, is not remembered. So on our first Pros for Africa trip, I took a young man named Derek Watson, who used to work for OETA, and he's a filmmaker, and he's a genius. And I told Derek, I said, we should interview some of these little girls and Sister Rosemary, and we should tell this story. So we gradually, over the years, interviewed a number of these children. Now young ladies. These were babies having babies. And after about a 4-year journey, we've now finished that film. So we're gonna put this documentary film out. It's called Sowing Hope, The Life Story of Sister Rosemary Nyirumbe. And along the way, we also wrote a book, the same title. And we'll roll both those out this fall. And we're hopeful that Sister Rosemary's story will be known by everybody, because that's the only way you're going to keep history from repeating itself, is by bringing things like this to the attention of the world.
Well, your commitment clearly in telling the story is remarkable. And you know, the fact is that we don't know enough about these kinds of stories. And unfortunately, northern Uganda is one of many stories that we could be telling along these lines. But I think, Reggie, the thing that's particularly touching is how, you know, you ended up in this situation, and from your particular experience and your own family tragedy, and how something like this going on in another part of the world kind of, I don't know, gave you a new chance, a new life, a new focus that is incredibly personal, obviously, but also very touching. And I think instructive to the rest of us, you know, that kind of perspective can be gained in such a terrible thing? I mean, is that really kind of how you would see it? Is that just it, your eyes were then opened after having experienced such a very obviously painful and difficult thing?
Well, my eyes were open. To tell you the truth, I only have a vague recollection of what my life was like before 11 years ago. I really don't know who I was. I don't remember anymore. I'm a different person. But I like what I'm doing now. I have a reason to live now. You know, I had four other kids, and I love them, but it's hard to live after you've lost a child. But what I went through was not as bad as what these kids went through. That much I can tell you. And I noticed a very unique phenomenon. Sister Rosemary, in a great act of kindness, we built a school in northern Uganda, and she named a building over there after my son. So we had a little ceremony. And, you know, some of my athlete buddies and some of my friends were there, and we had a ribbon cutting. And I noticed there were quite a few tears flowing that day. But the one who was hurt the most was Sister Rosemary. She was the one crying the most. She appeared to be the one suffering the most. But she never even met my son. And I remember thinking, why is Rosemary hurting so bad? And I kind of figured it out. She has this unique talent to drain the suffering of others away and take it on herself. And I noticed she's doing that to these children. When she's around these children, they're not hurting as bad. And I've never seen a phenomena like that before. And I don't have the power to get her to get nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. But she should, and she should win it. Taking nothing away from the incredible work of Mother Teresa, who I'm a big fan of. But nobody was trying to kill Mother Teresa like Rosemary. And I really think it would be a game changer in Uganda, and it would be the right thing to do. And telling her story, maybe that'll happen. We'll see.
Well, Reggie, thank you so much for joining us today. It's such an inspirational story. Obviously, what you've shared with us about Sister Rosemary and what she shared with us previously on this show is so important. But what you've also shared in terms of what you've experienced and what you bring to us, I think, you know, we all thank you for that. So thank you for being with us today and sharing that story with us.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to my conversation with Reggie Whitten, the founder of the charity Pros for Africa. You can find this conversation and a link to our interview last year with Sister Rosemary Nairumbe on our website, kgou.org. Worldviews is a production of KGOU alongside the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies. Hillary Gibson prepares the research for our interviews, and Brian Hardzinski edits the show and produces our web content. For Rebecca Cruz, I'm Suzette Grelott.